It's such a pleasure to meet you.
You are so sweet. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for doing this. It's so generous.
Well, I want you to tell the story, right, don't I? We're taller. You look taller on television, but we're basically the same size.
I'm basically the same.
Feels like things just settled down, and now y'all are making a movie.
It's a very complex and human story.
I think it's hard to trust that you're going to represent
Gracie as she was.
I'm going to try. Do you remember when you first met?
You came to the pet store looking for a job.
It was summer after sixth grade?
Seventh.
Why do you want to play me?
When they sent me the script, I thought, here is a woman with a lot more to her than I remember from the tabloids.
What would make a 36-year-old woman have an affair with a seventh grader?
People, they like see me as a victim. I wanted it.
I already have an idea of what it must have felt like.
What?
Sneaking around with you. I shouldn't have said that.
Why would you want to play someone who you think is a bad person?
It's the moral gray areas that are interesting.
She's getting on my last nerve. She's just everywhere I look.
Welcome to the No Film School podcast. This is Gigi Hawkins, and one of my favorite things about the magic of film and TV is the power of what is unsaid, whether we're placing the camera in a very specific way or the audience is being told specific information that our main character is not. It's all about what is not being said so we can piece something together. And you know, like when an actor is conveying something with a look that says it all, I've always wondered, like, how do you do that on the page as a screenwriter? This week, I speak with Sammy Birch, screenwriter of the new film May-December, which is screening on Netflix, streaming on Netflix, starting December 1st and in theaters before that. From the acclaimed director Todd Haynes of Safe and Carol, this film stars Natalie Portman, Julianne Moore, and Charles Melton of Riverdale fame, giving a groundbreaking performance, totally nuanced, that, you know, changed my entire perspective and just shows how, you know, you can really start somewhere and then take a career in a totally different direction. May-December follows a married couple, Moore and Melton, 20 years after their notorious tabloid romance gripped the nation. And Natalie Portman plays an actor who arrives into their lives as an actress who is doing research for a film about their past. So it's a little bit meta. It's definitely aware of that it's a story about the stories we tell. And it is an incredible, gripping performance that has haunted me. And the tough thing about this job is that I have to watch things and then I can't talk to people about it. And this is one that I really needed to process with some people. So that's what I'm doing now in real time and with Sammy on the podcast. And whether or not you've seen the film, just hearing about what it's about tells you that it's all about what is unsaid. And that's what we'll dig into during my conversation with Sammy. And Sammy brings this very unique perspective to the table. This is her feature writing debut after working in the world of casting, and we'll learn how her work as a casting director gave her a unique edge as a screenwriter. And now, my interview with Sammy Birch.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Olly.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome, Sammy, to the No Film School podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This film has, it's one of those films where I watched it, you know, I get a pre-screener, Netflix sets it up on my account, I watched at home, and then I was like, I just need to talk with people about this. I need to process this. I'm feeling like all the feelings. And now finally the film's in theaters and it's coming out on Netflix. Now finally I get to do that. But what better person to process with than the screenwriter of the film? So congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a really exciting experience from the very first day and up through now. It's exciting.
How long has the journey been to get to this point?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk the very first sparks of thinking of this idea, that would be like fall of 2018. The first draft was written in spring of 2019. Mm-hmm. And then 20 started all of these incredible attachments. Jessica L. Baum and Will Ferrell as producers, and then Natalie as actress and producer, and then Todd. And then it was an avalanche of amazing people.
Just a snowball getting bigger and
bigger. Yeah, exactly.
That is now just sitting in a theater and people are in awe. That's awesome. Now you have you're one of our more unique screenwriters coming onto the podcast and filmmakers in general, because you come from the casting world. So I'd love to hear how you got your start, and we'll talk about May, December later on. I have some specific questions about the film and your approach, but where did it all start, Sammy?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up I really literally grew up in a casting office because my mom is a casting director and I was constantly there after school, which is, if you've ever sat in an audition waiting room, you know, it's not the best energy. It's quite horrible.
It's a lot.
But it's a lot. And I have a lot of very weird memories. And I would also, when I was really little, I would sit under her desk and hear auditions going
of
the same line over and over and over. And so that was just like very natural place that I was, a strange but natural place. And then but I've always really considered, you know, that's been the goal is writing. I was, you know, writing plays in high school that we're mm-hmm. putting on, and I went to college for screenwriting. And then, so I fell into really, my mom was, she's cast some amazing iconic films in LA, but then at a certain point, she really got sick of this town and decided to move first to Wilmington, North Carolina, and then Atlanta. And so she does location casting now, which is, so, you know, there's an LA casting director and all the leads and come from there. But then, you know, especially in big films like The Hunger Games and some of these credits I have, as a local casting assistant, it's okay. And then there's 60 other roles that are sometimes a single word. So basically I was temping for a year, a few years after college, I was temping. And when I got, she lost her assistant at a point and she needed someone to jump in, and I was trained. But I had been temping at the real estate department of a hospital. And I was like, that sounds great. Yeah. I'm good. I'd love to leave this hospital now. Yeah. So that kind of started. I would go down and work on a project with her. And it's honestly very Grey Gardens, except I imagine they had to cast the locals of The Hunger Games. That was kind of the setting in this house. It was all in her house. And so I would go down there, would come back to New York. I'd have some time to write. You know, I wrote a lot of specs over the years for no one, basically. And then there exists this very low budget film industry of people that can't pay for, you know, more higher up legit casting directors. So I have some credits on my own that were really fun, some of those films, but they were, I don't know how viewed they've been, but that was, it was just an unsustainable kind of day job for something that is really its own artistic career that I respect so much. And it's kind of just what I did to get enough time to write
and
keep, you know, hitting that the eggshell, trying to get to that next
tap, tap, tapping away.
Exactly, a lot of tapping. And so the last thing I did that was around 2019 is when I started. That was the last job I think I did for that was casting.
So you've always been a screenwriter throughout this time. And one of the things that I always think is interesting is when somebody is working in a different space, but then coming home and writing at the end of the day, inevitably that work will seep into the choices you make on the page. I think of an editor, you know, editing and then note reading in a script and being like, well, I know this scene is going to get cut because like, we don't need this.
Exactly.
How did your work in casting influence your writing?
I mean, it's the twofold thing is one, I love actors, even though there's a certain irony because of the one that's the character in this film.
I know.
It's not the most flattering portrait, but I do love actors. And that is really my goal with writing is to write roles that actors think are interesting. But the more practical answer that I really think is has played a big effect is when I was an assistant, you know, one of my jobs was to make these audition sides. And similar, as you're saying, editors knowing things are going to get cut, there are so many small parts that don't need to be there and would go through this process of hundreds of people reading in their bathroom and then they shoot it and then the callback, well, this stuff. And then, you know, people would have to make a painful phone call. You got cut, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm very careful with who's these small roles. Like some of my favorite line deliveries are one line characters in this, you know, local actors that, you know, have at least just something, either if it's comedic or emotional, whatever it is, I wanted to make sure that no one got cut from this movie and that everything is there for a reason and no one did get cut.
That was going to be my follow-up question. And this is something I'm sort of thinking about in real time, but thinking about the characters in May, December, you are entering and exploring this world and sitting down and through the vehicle of Natalie Portman's character, who is an actor that is researching this role by meeting the character that she will be playing. We're getting a little meta here, but we get to meet so many characters who are adjacent or part of, or who are thrust into this story willingly or unwillingly. And they're each so dynamic and they each have such like specific perspectives, bringing something specific to the table. And one, there's a character that I've noticed and it's a character we don't see. We just hear on the phone. I think there's two of them that are outside of this world. And the information that we are getting just from hearing their voice is powerful and it informs us about, you know, our protagonist. And, but I don't even think it's necessary to see them in this world that we're in. And that seems like such an intentional, deliberate choice to, you know, I'm sure you watch so many movies too, where you're like, that must've been somebody related to the director away, or the kid was really cute on set, so they kept the role, but really like that should have been cut or that was not necessary to propel the story forward. So like that discipline and character, and also thinking about the actor, I mean, what a cool, unique perspective to bring to the table.
Yeah, it's so hard to be an actor. It really is. And I've had that happen with friends who have gotten cut from things, you know, and it's so rarely an easy, you know, it's like you fly to a place, you're in costume, you have a fitting, you know, and then so it's, yeah, that is, I do try to be mindful of that if it's possible. But yeah, I think I'm so indebted to Laura Rosenthal, who cast this movie and who's worked with Todd since, I think, Velvet Goldmine was their first collaboration. So that, I mean, so as with so many people in Todd's orbit, you know, there's this team that go back really far and that are just incredible artists and craftsmen, and Laura just did such an incredible job on this. Obviously the big find, of course, is Charles, which is not an easy role to fill. But then, you know, everybody, I think all the supporting characters and down to the one-liners, and the kids, oh my God,
the three
kids are so wonderful. The actor Gabriel Chung, who plays Charlie, the son on the roof, This was his first audition.
Really?
He's ever done.
Wow.
He's 18 years old. He lived in Georgia. So there's such that range of actors who have been, you know, who are so established and have such a history, and then brand new ones, which is, it's cool.
He stood out to me, and I was like, oh, if only I was working on like a high school movie, like I would love to cast him. Like they were fantastic. What was seeing the final cut, like what performance captured your attention in an unexpected way?
I mean, it's impossible question because they're all so amazing, and having seen it now so many times, there are still moments certainly with the three of them that I notice little choices, mm-hmm. you know, that it does kind of unfold in that way of these little moments where Natalie chooses to let Elizabeth's mask slip, where there's just like either a wince or a line that's honest. You know, it's so rare. And I mean, everything. Julianne, this incredible character she's created. The lisp was pure Julianne. Just this unbelievable understanding of a character that ultimately is unknowable. You know, I mean, that's such a core idea in this story is everyone trying to understand what she was aware of, how natural or calculating, you know, there's that question. So it's so funny with this level, you know, everything's redundant. It's Julianne Moore is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a surprise to no one, but it's still magnificent to see. And then Charles, there's so much subtlety, so much pent up, mm-hmm. so many these physical nuance, the look in his eye in different points. I mean, it's really overwhelming. Yeah. And I mean, Corey Michael Smith, who plays Georgie, also is so electric. I mean, that's such a fun character to write. And then, you know, seeing someone so fully embody it and bring such the humor and the reality to it it's so fun.
The thing that is so fascinating about each character, outside of the fact that it was written in a way that they're so specific and they each are bringing this different perspective, is you feel for them on both sides. And that is what lets us, as the audience, exist in this gray area and live in it for the entirety of the film, which is fascinating. And I think it's so easy to step over into caricature, which doesn't do service to this story, or it just takes away from it. And I think that, I'm going to ask a sort of meta question about the form and the story that you chose to tell and the way that it all came together. But I think a lot about the way we dehumanize people in the media who are just people, and in the gray areas around that. Like, I had a family member who was murdered in the 90s, and then a podcaster came along and made a podcast about it. And the thing that drove me the most insane was the podcast wasn't even good, because I come from the podcast world and I'm like, I don't think this guy's even using a mic, and like he's coming in and stirring up all this shit. And
brutal.
It was like insult on top of insult. And so exactly. I think that this was set, like, what was the spark in 2018 that sort of made you know you wanted to tell a story from a very different perspective about the stories we tell?
Yeah. I mean, well, the first spark was in thinking about, it wasn't like sitting there trying to go, oh, what tabloid story hasn't been told, because they really all are getting, I mean, we're going right down the line, but it was just random thought, I think, of realizing that Mary Kay LaTourneau, this real couple, that their kids were probably adults.
Yeah.
And I just had this image of this empty house. But right from the start, it was really important to me that this was a fictionalized version of a couple like that. Nobody's assuming, oh, these conversations happened, or, you know, that's my fear, or at least my hope that they don't. But I always, it was from that first thought, it was like, what if we check in with a couple like this right on the verge of a high school graduation, right on the verge of being an empty nester? Mm-hmm. And then my husband, who shares story by credit on on the movie with me, Alex Mechanic. We have come from, he was in film school, I was in screenwriting, you know, writing school, and we've made a lot of shorts together that I've written and we've directed together. And it just came from these early conversations of like ways into the situation that allow for, I mean, setting it 20 years later, that's a certain amount of space and breadth. But then coming in with this television actress with something to prove to try and get off of her kind of network procedural about an animal hospital, there's something inherently funny about that.
Yeah.
So that there's more air, there's more space. Like, that's important to me. Just, I think, on the premise of trying to get a better idea of something, or trying to understand something in a bigger way. I think when we retell very literally these stories, of course, sometimes it works beautifully, like Dog Day Afternoon, but most of the time it feels like, what are we exactly getting out of this?
Yeah.
You know, and we're also staring very clearly at something very horrible. And so that felt like right from the beginning, what the way to tell this story. And then, you know, the different braids of it, getting to sort of, it's all fragmented, you know, seeing every single different character's points of view, and the double image that kind of appears when the two of them, when Gracie and Joe are having these scenes together, you can't help but sort of project into the past. And then there are these constant memories planted in that kind of sober us up. I mean, sometimes they're funny, but mainly I think they're very disturbing. The movie, I think, it does exist in both spaces, sometimes in the same moment, which is such a...
So powerful.
I mean, it's incredible, you know, the director, like Todd, how in control he is of the audience and these incredible performances. But yeah, so I guess that, it, you know, that all just felt like the right way to kind of try and attack something so complicated and sensitive without... Yeah, but there was just more room, I think.
The being able to explore the discomfort and also the laughing because something is funny and laughing because we're uncomfortable. And then also meditating on like how this story would be told in a different setting. There's this shot in the very beginning of Gracie standing at the fridge. And then we have this like dramatic push in, and then she's like, we need more hot dogs or something along like those lines. And I'm just like, this, it helped me contextualize like how I would be watching this story unfold. And yeah, it's just so, it's not like anything I've ever seen. And it was such a fun meditation that, again, I saw a friend who's an actor saw a screening of it and, you know, posted it in the big theater. And I was like, oh my gosh, finally I can talk to somebody about it. But something that like sticks with you and haunts you in a way, it's so powerful. How did you live within this story for so long in writing it and writing it with your partner at time, or bouncing the story ideas off your partner?
Yeah, what the process was is we had a few conversations. We kind of both wrote notes, you know, over the course. It was kind of this, oh, gotta outline that. And then things kind of came into clearer picture. And then we put cards on our living room wall. And then from there, I like to write character kind of bios, like a page or 2 pages of each of these characters just for me. And then I went into our, what was a coat closet in our old apartment. Uh-huh. And that's where I was writing. There was no space. But it did have a window, but it couldn't open. But at least there was light in this little closet. That was important. But, and then from there, yeah, it was, I mean, I tend to write quickly. Like, I like to mull things over. You know, we finished that outline in, I don't know, February of 2019. And then it was sort of a process of, but a bulk of it came in a pretty short amount of time. Because I'm really more of a writer that works towards deadline versus, you know, the kind of Ben Franklin, I'm going to write every day, I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. And so then there, it's nice to have that, because there's also these breaths of waiting. You know, it was like, I wrote this, I had no representation. That was really my main goal, was hoping that this would get me an agent or a manager. So there was this big period of trying to get people to read it. And then about 6 months later, I lucked out so much with a friend of a friend's friend of a boyfriend's friend had read it just because he's an interested person. He's a producer named Alex Plappinger, and he sent it to my now managers just as a favor. I mean, it's just like the kind of luck that it takes to have these dominoes
and hard work.
And then
hard work.
And it's,
you
it
went into
hard
that
work.
Closet it, I mean, and wrote.
Absolutely. And also just and that's really what I'm sure people are at the stage that I was a few years ago. It's such an endurance game. Yeah. It's stamina is really the thing, because I left college, you know, I was very lucky to go to college for screenwriting, and I left with a certain amount of confidence. And then you have to hold on to that for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Truly as protect that confidence in your own voice, because that's the hardest part, is how when other people are getting things, you know, and you're writing one spec after the next for me, it was for literally no one. No one ever read any of those scripts. And I didn't think, oh, well, this is shit. You know, every single one I was hopeful about. Yeah. So it's like navigating those disappointments can be really hard. But then with this, yes, it was like first Jessica Albaum and Will Ferrell, their company was the first to attach, and they had amazing notes. So it was like, okay, now I have a new deadline. And there's been at that point, maybe 9 months of getting to that, you know, fresh eyes are just the most valuable thing.
What a gift. Yeah. Especially fresh eyes that understand story and understand
exactly
an eye towards making something.
Absolutely. And so the, getting to, you know, have that draft, and then it went to Natalie Portman and her producing partner, Sophie Mass. Natalie and Todd, I met the first time together on Zoom. Mm-hmm. This was all in the pandemic. Yeah. So it was I talked to Jessica the first time on the phone right before that lockdown when Todd talked about COVID. I mean, it was really, this whole thing has been more surreal than even it would have been, because I didn't meet anybody in person for such a long time. And it was like these great things happening. And then it was like, but I'm still in my apartment.
Yeah. Like, and there's the closet that it all went down.
Yeah,
in.
Exactly.
But that's so powerful. Closet. That's, I mean, it's interesting how it unfolds in ways that you don't expect when you least expect it. And I love that your goal was, this is going to find me representation, in how it, you know, and you had a very tangible goal, something that you can work towards, but then it took on this life of its own. And that's so exciting and powerful. One of the things, and I'm sure I bet you're on just cloud nine and seeing it come to life, especially like after the pandemic, when there were those years where we're like, will movies be a thing, or at least a couple of months?
Right, right.
I have no doubt that this popped for people when reading it because of the power dynamics that you created throughout the story. And it's fascinating and it's so beautiful and terrifying at the same time. And I would love to hear how you present power on the page, because that's all we have at this stage. One of the only things we can control is the writing that we're doing. And especially when it comes to something like a story that is so much is being not said, so much is what's not being said,
exactly,
and those power dynamics. So how did you approach that from the beginning? And maybe even if there's a particular scene that stands out to you, we could talk about that.
Well, I think that, I mean, Gracie, what makes her a fun character to write and an interesting character to watch, I think, is that so little that's being said is truthful. And we don't know her level of awareness. That's the case. You know, there's this, and that's something I really am interested in just in life. I find myself thinking that, you know, in silly ways, like watching Survivor, I'm fascinated by this idea of, you know, for people that are very good at manipulating, you know, are with her, are there moments of really thinking things through, like really plotting, really aware of this? Or is it as natural as a jaguar in the jungle? And it's just not even considered. It's just is, it's alive, you know, in her personality. I think that is endlessly fascinating. And the way that this person, you know, there's this sort of hyper femininity that she's weaponized, and the way she presents herself, mm-hmm. and she is very much in control of basically every interaction and relationship, and yet is still insisting upon this very little girl, this very tiny, you know, little girl that needs to be protected and is, you know, unaware of this big scary world and needs this man. You know, she's distorted a lot. And so, yes, I think that there is this, the tension exists in what is not being said. Exactly. It's this almost throughout the whole film. I mean, there's just, it functions similarly, I think, to the way a horror movie mm-hmm. does, where you're going, don't do that. But in this, it's please say what is truthful, say something honest that I know, that I feel, to be honest, as an audience member in my body, you know, it twists, it's so uncomfortable. And yes, and that's why there needs to be, or at least that's, you know, I think there needs to be these releases,
yes,
these of humor, and, you know, it just kind of, but I think that as you experience watching alone, or I'm assuming you are watching alone, it's a very different experience in a crowd, mm-hmm. Both for the humor, but also because there are these moments that get audible. You know, like, it's so fun to feel.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
I do want to see it in a theater for that exact reason. Because,
yeah, I highly recommend it.
I remember watching, somehow I got into a QC screening of Midsommar before it came out, and I watched with two other people in a theater at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. And then I got to see it, and I was like, this is horrifying, and the dread and all the feelings, and breakups are tough, and fuck yeah, and all the things. And then I watched it opening night, like back in Brooklyn at the Alamo Drafthouse, and people were roaring with laughter, and it was such a different experience. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a comedy? I did not know. And I was like, there's still the dread, but there is, and that's why we love seeing our movies in theaters, or seeing it with a crowd. Yeah. If you watch alone, watch with a friend, watch with a crowd, maybe don't watch with your dad at Thanksgiving. Could be a little uncomfortable.
Hey, maybe.
But maybe if that's what you're into. You know, we're not judging.
Yeah, go smoke weed with your dad on the roof.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See that, how it goes.
That's
report back.
And you'll never know what's going to come out in that conversation. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So how is it like seeing it what is surprising you about seeing it with an audience? And like, what is surprising you about the reaction? Is there anything where you're like, wow, I did not expect somebody to take that away, but I love that?
You know, I've mostly been just so thrilled and relieved. You know, it's a sensitive subject. You know, I've been so happy that the intentions have been clear, that people can see both tones clearly, that the laughs stop exactly where they're supposed to. That's so important and has been so nice. And I also love reading Letterboxd reviews. I really do. I love seeing people are so funny. And they sometimes have some gorgeous insights into the film and the meaning and everything like that. So that's been, it's just been surreal for it to exist out in the world now. I mean, there were certain festivals, you know, every time I'd be like, oh, it's playing in Sydney, you know, and then be like, there'd be this influx of responses. But now it's so many more. It's so overwhelming.
Just get ready. It's going to keep coming. Yeah. Well, congratulations, Sammy. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And congrats on the film being out in the world. I can't wait for our listeners to see it.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. It was so nice to talk to you. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Sammy, for coming on, for telling us about your journey to get here. It's really exciting to hear about somebody's success after years of writing in the closet and writing as a side hustle, both working in the industry and outside of the industry. It's inspiring and it's awesome. I don't think I'll ever throw in a character in my script unless I truly believe they're going to be there in the end because of the work that it takes to get somebody cast. I think that's such an interesting perspective to bring to the table. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. You can like, rate, and subscribe to the No Film School podcast by going to anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on social media at No Film School. And you can send us emails, podcast@nofilmschool.com. We love to hear from you. We love to hear what is resonating with you in terms of our conversations and our interviews. What questions do you have? Finally, you can get more at No Film School, screenwriting tips, filmmaking tips, lighting tips, and so much more on nofilmschool.com. Thank you so much for listening.